three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. NBL Pocket Podcast, Wednesday, 13th of March. It's about midnight on the East Coast. Both games have just finished. I'm joined by Andrew Canyon. We're going to be going through all the games and then also look forward for the teams that have been eliminated, but then also for some NBL news. Canyon, how you doing?
Podcast in your pocket. I'm happy to be here. It's been a while since we've done one of these. We've really lowered our frequency of broadcast, haven't we? But I think what we're exchanging for quantity is quality, Joseph Court.
I think so too.
So let's hope that we do that again. But yeah, a couple of good games tonight.
A couple of great games tonight.
In the league. So,
and I feel good about recording immediately after. We were saying this is from the locker room. I'm still sweaty. Me too.
Yeah. I've risen off the couch. I've moved to the recording studio.
I'm sweaty here in two
Canyon
places.
Enterprises.
I'm sweaty in three places, actually. The brow, the gusset, and the third place, well, I'll kind of leave that to the audience's imagination, but sweaty all over. Man, where do you want to go? What do you want to talk about?
Well, we can do that. We have to do the two games, the whole two series.
Good point.
The series with a focus on the third game, because I think that's what's fresh in my mind, certainly.
You don't want to do the Wildcat game? Let's do that.
You want to go inverse chronological order?
I do, because I'm already starting to forget. The Perth Wildcat game is very fresh in my memory.
Probably
stopped 5 minutes ago, whereas the Melbourne game is already fading into the abyss. It's already fading into the distance. So,
let's do
Wildcats,
that then.
Man, first thought. First of all, did you actually enjoy the game? Like, you felt it was interesting or fun?
Not really, because it wasn't that competitive.
Competitive at all.
So I was very chilled watching on the couch. A lot of fun just came from a bunch of my mates just throwing shade at the Wildcats on the chat.
Yeah, we all got in on that. At what point did you go, yeah, this thing's over? Just quickly while you think about it, for me that was about early third quarter, probably about 4 minutes into the third quarter. I was like, yeah, this is done.
Yeah, I was almost sooner than that, probably midway through the second, to be perfectly honest.
Was there a moment that just spiked you and you went, this is iced?
Sort of not speaking truth to my answer just then, but when it came out, it was the third quarter, wasn't it? Milton Doyle just came out and went whack, bang, bang, hit shots all over the place. Wildcats with turnstiles. Doyle scored like 10 points in a couple of minutes and it was like, this is done. Compounded by the fact that basically they just went up, Wildcats just going up the other end and not finding their best player. They don't care. This team doesn't care. They went out.
And the one stat that says that is 21-9 assists in favor of Tasmania. At 9 for a game. That's hopeless. Hopeless. You're not stuck to the scout. I'll just say this. Yeah, you said they couldn't find Cotton. One field goal in quarter three, three field goal attempts in the second half. I didn't care if he was getting double teamed. That's not enough.
And one of those was a layup at the death where everybody had basically stopped playing.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah,
absolutely hopeless. This team, it's the dumbest Wildcats team I've potentially ever seen.
Strong words, dumb, but I totally agree. It is as there was no counter. It was like a game of chess where they just moved all their pieces, like just broke the rules, just knocked all their pawns out of the way and just said, take whatever you want. There was no counter strategy from this team whatsoever. No counter strategy to the double team on Bryce Cotton off picks. There was no counter to and they allowed their lesser players, Usher and Saar and Harrah and these guys to make moves on the behalf of Bryce Cotton. John really should be really embarrassed by this one, don't you think?
He should be, but he seems impervious to that. He just screams at referees and doesn't seem to take personal accountability sometimes. Doesn't change. Like, what's the definition of stupidity? Doing the same thing over and over again. And that's exactly what the Wildcats did tonight. They never made the Jack Jumpers think about it or get out of their own comfort zone at all. It was the same defensive scheme the whole time. They never had reason to change it because the Wildcats never changed their attack approach and made it pretty straightforward.
And as you say, I found it obnoxious at a point. I mean, Gleeson rode refs, right? And Vickerman does it as well. And it's demonstrative. It's not demonstrative. It's aggressive, but it's always to the point of, I want this call. Hey, you missed that call. He's hanging in the keyway. Three, whatever it is, there's an instruction to it. Really just pisses and moans.
Mm.
And that, and you could see it just totally deflect onto his team, where they just, they're like, are we bitching at refs, or are we coming up with something? Because they were in that game to halftime, kind of. And yeah, they just never looked at the opponent in front of them. They just never looked at the four, never looked at the problem in their face, and they got beat bad, lost by essentially 20. I think they trimmed it back a bit, but it may as well have been 20.
It was a 20-point margin, let's face it, yeah. And just, I tell you what, the sooner the Wildcats get rid of Jordan Usher, like if he is not checked out of Australia by the end of the week, like they've held on too long. The guy was an absolute turnstile in defense. One said, I was sending like traffic cone gifts.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, like here's a photo of Jordan Usher. He stood there at one spot. Jack McVay just gave a nice little reverse pivot layup.
Oh, that was bad enough.
He's attacking the rim and just losing control of the ball. His one successful shot that I can recall was a long 2 foot on the line three.
Like, that summed it up, didn't it? It's a blowout. It's over. And what does he do? Comes down the court, jacks up a three, and with a foot on the line makes it. I just thought, yep, that's a fitting last play. That'll do it. That sums it up. My favorite was the Jack McVay, who, by the way, Jack McVay, I mean, Milton Doyle was the guy in this game, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Jack McVay was right there. Magne as well.
Yep.
But McVay was just on fire. And the thing was, he was just wide open. Jack McVay didn't have to do a single thing out of his most comfortable and most usual shot chart, you know?
He's come solid. Pitch, he's so good now.
He's just, well, he was left completely wide open. Yeah, go on.
Joe, would you have, everybody's talking about Will Magne for the Olympics, Smokey, all that.
Mm-hmm.
What about Jack McVay?
Well, Golding goes most years. Who would you prefer?
I'd take McVay.
100%.
And I think everybody freaks out, oh, he doesn't have the athleticism to go with the Americans. Yeah, nobody does. But you know what? He can play European basketball with the best of them.
Mm.
Like, the Latvia have a bunch of Jack McVays, you know? Like, I think we need to be a bit more sort of broad thinking in our approach to the Boomers composition sometimes, not just picking an NBA guy. I like Jack McVay.
Yeah,
I need to do well.
I agree, and deep on that bench, you can always, whenever you look down a bench and you can see a guy who actually hits some shots, it's a good feeling. Yeah. I mean, Golding
was four or five for threes. What was Chris Golding tonight?
2 of 10.
Yeah.
So, well, 3 of 10. So,
and McVay does other things.
And McVay does other things. Are better. I want to talk about Bryce Cotton. Is this the worst body language we've seen from him in his career with the Wildcats?
I think so.
100%.
What's his contract situation? Because if
we're going to go through that.
I'd be worried walking.
Just spoiler alert, he's under contract. But you know what NBL contracts are like. Everyone's got an NBA and a EuroLeague out, which he could clearly command, and Japanese out if that B-League came calling. Yeah, he was just the shocking body language. Boy, he was intensely frustrated. There were tweets where people were saying he was calling for guys to come in and out around him, Pinder, Webster. I can't really confirm nor deny that, but yeah, the worst body language we've seen. And it's funny, it comes off the criticisms from your best friend, Minton Doyle's mother, Mrs. Doyle, I forget her name, apologies if she's listening. She'd said that Cotton was a prima donna. Well, I mean, he had every right to be frustrated, but he still was very prima donna, blaming guys for mistakes. There was a time when he came off a pick, threw it to where Webster was on the side, who'd cut. Yeah. And I'm not a Corey Webster fan. The best times, I didn't hate the cut. I didn't hate what he did. I didn't know the play, so maybe he definitely wasn't meant to move. But Cotton went off at him, went wild, saying, what are you doing cutting and all this sort of stuff. So half frustration, half lousy teammates. I don't know which way. Which way do you slice it?
How do you feel when you're clearly the best player on the court and you just get frozen out of the offense every single time? Like, it's been your team for the last five, six, 7 years, whatever it's been at this point, and you bring the ball up you get doubled, you pass it off, and that's your job done. You're never seeing it again. Like, and you're the best player they've got. Like, that's just ridiculous. And I don't blame him for being frustrated.
And I'm not a basketball tactician by any means, but I'm sort of like, okay, John, really, so Cotton catches it, and certainly if he comes off a pick, they throw a double. What's the counter to that? Like, is it a sort of he gives it off and then a handoff back to him going the other way? Or is it some sort of rotation? Or do you make sure that the person picking him is a certain player who commands attention? I don't know what the remedy is, but there was just no attempt to do anything. And as a result, Pinder got totally taken out of this game because the double just meant he couldn't roll and he just didn't do anything. So it's just a mess.
I think Pinder took himself out of this game as well. He had a shocker.
He just was so invisible.
0 points, got the donut, seven rebounds.
I don't want to look at that box score. Let's look forward at Perth. Are you done with comments from that game?
Let's see. Just in general, the Jack Jumpers, congratulations. I think it was really well done. And they did it with Crawford having two really ordinary games.
Yeah, very. Like
again tonight, he was basically ineffectual. Hit one triple, that was it. But they just keep clicking along. They don't sort of seem to mind so much. They have such a system in place that they just make the modification and carry on. McDonald picks up some of the slack and away they go.
I said this in a tweet. I said, I had Illawarra as no prayer to beat Melbourne. It just wasn't going to happen in Melbourne. It would have been a mistake had it happened and we have an Illawarra grand final and Wynn Stadium's got 2.5 people in it. It was always going to be Melbourne. But I did say that the Jack Jumpers are very capable of beating Perth. Intense discipline, strong coach who can counter, you know, when things go poorly. They didn't have to do any countering, but strong discipline. They won all the sort of former Perth Wildcat stats, out-rebounded them, limited turnovers, beat them on second chance points. I mean, just like Wildcat of the winning generation. And I'm not surprised by this at all. Are you?
No. I was picking the Jack Jumpers to win tonight.
Good man. Busy
bit of sound outside.
Yeah, a bit of something going on. That's Jordan Usher making his way to the airport. Let's look forward to Perth. Perth, here's who they've got under contract. We'll do this very quickly. They've got Aquera, Bryce Cotton, Harris, Pinder, the other Harris, so Hiram and who's
Michael.
That one? Michael. Ben Henschel and Alex Sarbert next star. So he, you know, technically under contract. Yep. He's not coming back. So there who's coming back. I mean, at least you've got two of your starters in that mix. Harris, both of those guys showed potential. One actually got some minutes. The other got fucking iced.
Yep.
So you work it out. Aquera, I'm not so sure. Here's who's out of contract, Canyon, and I want you to just say yes or no, and if you must give a rationale or feel the compulsion. Out of contract, we'll start at the very top, the head of the fish. John Riley's out of contract, and it's a team option. What are you doing?
I'm out on John Riley.
You're going for thumbs down. You're getting someone else. Yeah, right.
Yep. I don't think the team will do that. They'll bring him back, but I think.
Okay, yeah, I agree. If you had an open market, I'd go, no, we'll test something out. We'll have a look what tells us. Corey Webster is out of contract, and it's a team option.
See you, Corey.
Ty Webster's out of contract. Probably a package deal, these two. Ty Webster's out of contract. Let's say they're not a package deal and you have the thumbs up, thumbs down.
I'm probably going to bring him back.
Yeah, I probably would too. Yeah. It didn't have a huge game today, but...
No.
All right, let's...
But he provides something a little bit... He's got some good versatility.
Yeah, good versatility. Yeah. When he's under control.
I would like to see him on reduced minutes. Off the bench, Ty Webster, I think, would be a better option.
Might be a bit expensive to bring him off the bench. Is it true? But I want to ask you this broader question, and then we're going to move off the Wildcats for people who aren't Wildcat fans out there.
Yep.
Are you as concerned as I am about the future of the Perth Wildcats? And I'll just prefix that by saying I am 8 out of 10 concerned, deeply concerned for the future of the team.
Do you mean in terms of their organization or the playing potential of them?
The players, the recent momentum of the team and the sort of personnel they bring in, and then the financial situation of their owner, Craig Hutchins.
Yeah, I'm deeply concerned.
Primarily the financial situation. I mean,
the financial situation is highly problematic. SEN seem to have papered over their debt cracks by bringing in some... Can I say potentially, how do I put this?
Yeah. Be careful.
I think they're somewhat gullible. I would not be investing my money in the Perth Wildcats.
I wouldn't be investing any money in the NBL, full stop. It'd be a fun adventure if you had money to kind of do something.
If you've got it to lose it, fine. You know, go to the casino and you have a flutter and you're happy to lose it, that's fine.
Hmm.
But I just feel that the people that Craig Hutchison has brought in seem to be the kind of people that you can sell snake oil to.
Hmm. Who's the most recent signee into the Wildcats business? Wasn't it someone?
There was a person who was a fan. He's been a fan for 10 years and thought it was a good idea to sort of throw some money. And surprisingly, Hutchie had been very friendly to him. God, amazing. Like, okay. I wonder how that plays out. There's somebody who's like had a sort of a – they had McDonald's franchises or something and had money from previous guy.
Ronald McDonald franchises. Sounds like a clown, so whatever he is.
Bit of loose cash floating around. It's like, what do you do with it? You could just put it in an index fund, but that's boring, so let's put it into a sports team. I don't know. It's just
interesting.
An interesting motley crew of investors. Let's put it that way.
To put a real kind of – put the focus on the court, and I agree with everything you've said, to put it on the court, it's just the quality of imports under this management, right? So Bryce Cotton is a holdover from yesteryear. That's not their doing. Just look at the guys who come through those spots now. Doolittle, pretty capable, actually, like Doolittle.
Solid Usher, without being spectacular.
Yeah.
Like Usher. Abs.
Usher. Then the year before was, again, Thomas, like, again, in that sort of Doolittle vein, like, yeah, serviceable player.
Yep.
I can't even remember the other imports, if they even had a third one.
That's the point, right?
Whereas I can still name the ones under Gleeson where you had Tarico White, who's just a solid pro player.
Yeah,
Jermaine Beal. Yeah. Like, these names just fall off the tongue because you remember them. They had moments that were good.
JP Tokoto.
he was
a bit of a bust, but, you know, cool name.
Great name. Love to go right. So that's okay. Good to hear. Well, not good to hear, but we are in agreement on Perth. Let's go back to Melbourne United. That's what I wanted to ask you about. Yes. Attendance. What do you think the attendance for the Melbourne Illawarra game was?
Game three, without looking, I'd say about $6,000.
You're bang on the money. Do you think that's more or less than the Wildcat game? And if so, and have a guess at the Wildcat number.
Well, I sort of cheated because I kind of saw the Wildcats attendance. So I'm going to say less than the Wildcats attendance.
It is less. Did you see what that number was for the Wildcats?
Yeah, it was like $7,500.
$7,500. Your thoughts on that number? That's low for Wildcats. It is a Wednesday night in
there
Perth.
There were Ticketek stuff ups.
Yes, I've
been
told.
The ticketing agency, that's one job is to sell tickets, managed to screw up ticket sales.
And they when you say screw up, members didn't get tickets, or they got tickets and they were wrong.
I think they got allocated their wrong seats, and then all those tickets had to be cancelled or something and reissued. Like, I didn't really pay that much close attention to it, but in terms of the detail of it. But basically, a lot of people got the wrong ticket. Did some people even get tickets? Who knows? And I think at short notice on a Wednesday night,
you just go bugger it.
For a team that's not really that amazing, it's like. And I don't know how much they were charging because I didn't even look. You're going up against, you just like, sit at home, watch two games for the price of none.
Exactly.
That's what I chose to do.
Exactly. But yeah, I thought that number was a little bit low. You expect, even on a Wednesday, Wildcats to be nudging that 10K mark. 6K for Melbourne. Again, like not bad, but a little bit low in my book.
Yeah, it's a typical problem with semis. Semifinals often don't draw because people save themselves for the granny.
Of course. It shows. Anyway, let's jump into this game. You watched it. Did you enjoy this one more or less than the Cats game?
More.
Why?
It was more enticing. It was more competitive. It seemed like both teams were more invested in winning and having really trying to win.
Yeah.
And after two great games before that as well, two overtime games where each of the teams that won probably shouldn't have. So Melbourne shouldn't have won that first game. Then Illawarra shouldn't have won the second because Golding should have just hit those free throws and sealed it. So it's just an interesting back and forth, and I think it set it up nicely for a third game. And it stayed close throughout, and you kept waiting for that the push from Illawarra. Was it going to come? Were the Hawks going to come through again?
Didn't happen.
So enjoyable. What do you think?
Well, you weren't deterred by the 68 total free throws and the 49 total fouls?
You know, there were a lot, but it didn't sort of... I didn't notice it as much as I do in some games. I think I was genuinely invested, so I didn't notice it.
I'm with you, and I felt a lot of the fouls were pretty warranted. I thought Chris Golding... I mean, he's always flopped. This was probably the worst series for him as far as really flopping. It was bad, and it was ugly, and it was gross, and it was so... The flops were so egregious and so overdone.
Yep.
It just cheapened... It really cheapened him and his image and his game in my mind. I just thought it was... To be that blatant about lying to refs to get calls, I get why people flop. It's a competitive advantage. I totally understand it, but... it's really bad to watch on TV. In person, it's not as bad. You see it once, you see it real quick. But when you see a replay, you're like, oh man, fuck that, you know?
Are you referring to the three? Like from the from the camera side?
The three when Justin Robinson was guarding.
There was no foul there.
There was just no foul there. But he made it look so good. He did. And that's the problem. Like you're fooling refs. You're prostituting the sport. Yeah, you're prostituting. And he does it really well, don't be wrong. The money's on the nightstand. Congratulations. But you've cheapened yourself and the game and everything else. But it is what it is. I don't know.
Yeah. But he went 1 of 3 on that trip to the line, so...
Yeah, ball didn't lie. Yeah.
Ball didn't lie.
I think bench points... for me, this whole series and game three, although the numbers don't really support it, but there was just nothing off that Illawarra bench, and you saw Gary Clark just sucking down the air. He had nothing left. There's nothing off the bench. He's like, oh, can anyone come in? Like, no, they cannot. Stay out there. Yeah, so when I saw him really sucking down the air at going into three-quarter time, I thought, they're not going to make it. And him and Harvey did not have great games. 23 points on 33% combined. It was pretty obvious for me. What did you think?
Yeah, well put. This is the game where Tyler Harvey had to actually play like the player that he can be. And he just didn't. He just didn't assert himself. He hit that big three at the end, but hey, you know, that's a nice shot, but it was too late. He needed to be assertive. He needed to get into the key, and he didn't really do any of that. The guy that it was all Will Hickey. Like, that guy's a freak. He's going to be awesome next season.
You had a good series.
I think the Hawks, like, I never expected them to really win. I always thought Melbourne were going to take this.
And if they'd won, I would have been really deflated. I would have been like, oh, they would have probably beaten Perth. They could have just doubled Bryce Cotton and John Riley like a toad, a frog in water that's slowly coming to the boil, would just sit there and be like, oh, it's getting hot all of a sudden, and you're dead. But they would be made mincemeat by Jack Jermaine. It's just not you want a good competitive Melbourne Tasmania is a great outcome. Melbourne Perth would have been just the virtue of massive crowd in Perth, massive crowd in Melbourne. You know, it would have been the best thing for the league. But this is a pretty good outcome. But if Illawarra had made it, it just would have felt hokey. I
feel like this is a good ending for Illawarra. I think finishing in the semis after the start they had, the big storyline of them coming back, I think it's kind of nice. It leaves something for next season for them to build on. And I think, a bit of roster development in this team, they've got some tough decisions to make.
We're going to talk about those decisions. I'll tell you who's under contract and who isn't.
Yeah, I think they've got some tough ones. But they've got a future now, whereas I didn't feel like they had a future earlier in the season.
No, they certainly didn't think that. You know what's going to be interesting? Slight departure, but imagine, because like Jackamus is going to get probably given the assistant coaching job with Gorgon at the Kings.
Failing upwards. Well done.
Yeah. Can you imagine being a player? And he comes up to you and is like, "Mate, actually, I've noticed that you're kind of dragging your... fuck off. Get the fuck away from it. How could you take his advice on anything?" Going back to the Hawks, though, under contract, this is who's under contract. Tatum, the coach, 3-year deal.
Yep.
Lockie Ulbrich for a couple of seasons as well. Dan Greeter, Sam Frolling, Todd Blanchfield, Pete Ling, AJ Johnson, the next star, so he probably departs, and then Bwalya Bales. Out of contract. And Canyon, you give me the thumbs up or the thumbs down and a rationale if you must. Will Hickey, it's a team option.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. Yeah, bring him back for
no
sure.
No rationale required. If you watch any of these games, you know why he's coming back.
The worry there is it's a team option. He will sort of explore his other options. And, you know, the price might get a bit much and, you know, where do you sort of place him? But it all comes down to this next question. Tyler Harvey, and before you answer, in this series, had 15 points on 5 of 11 in game 1, 23 points, 11 of 18 in game 2, and then a bad game 3, 9 points, 30% from the field. Yeah. Harvey, long-standing Hawk,
yep.
Import, long. He's been in the league now for, I think this is his fifth season.
Could that sounds be right? About right.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, Kenyon.
I'm giving him a thumbs up on the proviso that he's using different immigration lawyers than the Bryce Cotton team.
I like what you did there. That's good. That's good content.
So I think he'll become an Australian midway through next year, perhaps.
He's been PR for a while.
So presumably. Keep him here, convert his status, and then boost your stock once he becomes an Aussie. And then
let's take that off the table. Let's take any naturalization off the table just on pure on-court merit. What are you doing? But that's a great... I agree with you totally. That's really good point.
If it was just on court merit and he's just going to be an import for the rest of the next season, no, I'm letting him go.
Okay. Swaka. Out of contract, yes or no?
Probably keep him. Like, are you going to get anybody that's better than him at that price point? Probably not.
Always good to have one of those guys who's just a really good defender, can kind of shoot a little bit, plays with gumption. I'd bring him back. Same.
Yep. Yep.
Justin Robinson. Two up and... I'm going to answer my question first.
Yeah, yeah.
Two up and down for me. You know, we'll have a stinker, and then 25 points on 9 of 10 shooting. Stinker. I can't work with that from an import. An import, I need regularity. I don't get it from him. I'm out.
Yeah, good answer. I like him because he seems like a good club guy. You know, he hung around last season getting his insurance money or whatever he got as he was injured. But seemed like a good dude. But yeah, same with you. I think you can do better out there. So just too untrustworthy.
Too untrustworthy, too streaky. Some of the decision making.
Even tonight,
bad passes. Just didn't. Wasn't Jordan Usher level, but at times I was like, okay.
Nobody is Jordan Usher level. He's in the pantheon.
The worst thing was that, did he have a really good game in the first game of the season?
Yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. He got 35, I think. And
he's just like, I don't need to play D anymore. And to his word, didn't play D. Gary Clark, obviously bring him back, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, he was a beast. He's big too. And then the other one is Lee, the Asian guy, the shooter. You bring him back.
Bring him back, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. All right. So there's a bit of
shame they've
there.
It's a shame they've still got Blanchfield on the books.
And I wonder what the price is.
And Pete Ling. Not sure about it. And Carl Adam. What about him?
Yeah, I wouldn't bother. Politely, I think let sleeping dogs lie. Tell me this. Are you optimistic about this team for the future? I'm really optimistic about the Hawks.
I am optimistic because I think what's happening, they may actually have a little bit of money in the bank and they might get a major sponsor next year, which would be incredible.
It did look weird. You know when NBL jerseys do this when they don't have a sponsor, so the team name just sits in this no man's land, this just abyss.
It's like the beer gut logo. You know?
it's like when you're a kid. You're like 12 years old, you've less, and you've started like a club team on a Saturday morning, and you go out and you buy a whole bunch of white singlets, and because you're an idiot kid, you kind of think, oh yeah, that's where like I'll write with Texter, that's where the logo should go. When you know as an adult, you're like, no, it's got to be up on the breastplate, you got to go higher, because you're stupid, you put it down low, and you're like, oh, and it's down at your gut. That's exactly what it looks like, and it looks ridiculous. I don't know why they do that, but yeah, I'm optimistic.
Yeah, hopefully they'll get some more money, they'll be able to get some better imports, just bolster that bench a little bit. I can't believe Dan Greeter. I have no idea if Dan Greeter's a good player anymore or not. It's been so long since he's actually played.
Availability, best ability, he just doesn't have it. I'm actually a big believer in his game. Nice attack at the hoop, decent shot. He's been hanging around that club for ages. If he can get healthy, he can replace He just gives you options where, you know, like your Blanchfields, maybe you kind of can shift away.
Swaka the Bullock.
Swaka, like, well, we need a bit of offense here. So if you can stay healthy, this team actually, yeah, he's a bit of a pivot point for this team if he can get healthy. But I'd definitely bring back Harvey. I didn't answer that question. I really would. I've been a big fan of his game. And you could see that Melbourne was scared of him. And that carries weight in the NBL when guys carry defensive attention, you know, like a Golding and Harvey. These guys sometimes shoot poorly, but I can see his value. But that's me.
True. I want to ask you a question.
Oh, okay.
For you, Joe Corr, who was the player of this particular series? If you had to pick one out, who was standout?
I mean,
I'll allow one from each team if you must.
Probably Sam Frohling statted like crazy. Every game was like 25 and 10. He had amazing stats. He just compiled points for Illawarra. And across all the three games as well, I really value that.
Yep.
So he was probably their best. And then for Melbourne, I mean, flip, like Dellavedova's got to be in the conversation. Man, it's a bit of a team effort. I would probably say Dellavedova, though. In that game one that they needed to win, he dragged them back. And if they lost that game, the series is over. So I'm going to say Dellavedova. Am I crazy?
No, you mirrored my answers. They were exactly mine, Frohling and Dellavedova, which is incredible because I would never have picked either of those guys to be the key players of the series.
Going back to the series we mentioned before, Perth and Tasmania, I mean, forget the Perth player. We know who that is. Would you have had Doyle as Tasmania's best? He was so good in this one.
Certainly in game three, but I don't think overall because he was pretty quiet in the previous two.
Yeah, very.
I think I'd say McVeigh.
Yeah, McVeigh. Magnay kind of. But no, Magnay, I'd still go maybe. Doyle. Doyle was...
He has gravity.
Man, that was as good a game as I've seen it played. Like, he just hit shots. I remember he made a catch and shot it from the three with his back to the camera. He was sort of closest to the camera, and I could just see it was going down the moment it left his hands. I was like,
if you were watching that game tonight, sorry, George, back on the other game, if you were watching the Wildcats Jack Jumpers game and you knew nothing about this league, you would say probably, Doyle, he's maybe the league MVP.
Yep.
And you'd say Cotton, he's like maybe a good shooting guard, but not, solid player.
Coming up. And then you'd kind of be like, oh, Jack McVeigh, he must be like, is he in the Olympic team, you know? So all the things we've mirrored in this conversation. Yeah. Let's talk about the winners. Let's not harp on the losers too much. Melbourne, host, Tasmania. I mean, only one of these teams can win, but in that way, Larry Kesselman wins either way. I think he has a stake in both of these teams.
Less stake in Melbourne.
Yes, we're going to talk about that. But, how do you see the finals playing out, the grand finals?
I think it's a fun matchup. I like the two
teams. Yeah.
I think it's going to be a good contest.
Can I ask this question? Did the two best teams from NBL 24 make the finals? My answer is yes.
Yes, they did. Yep.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't. It's obviously Melbourne. And in the place of Jack Jumpers, it's certainly not Perth. It's not Sydney.
Perth had like, sort of some empty carbs kind of wins through that mid-season. They went on that run. They looked really good. If you had the grand final at that point, they were right up there. But that was the only point that they really did well. They faded at the end. They were terrible at the beginning.
Well, they just had that massive win streak, and they just mimicked none of what they did in that time in this game.
Yeah.
They played Corey Webb some more. He was on the bench during that stretch. Anyway, we're not going to...
They didn't have the strength of their convictions. Yeah.
Exactly, strength of their convictions. Let's talk about this series, Melbourne Tasmania. What do you think is going to happen? You agree that both teams could win this. This is actually
it's a toss of the coin, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
I think if I have to toss the coin, I'm going to say Tassie win.
I'm going to make up my mind at the end of your rationale because I'm right on the fence with this. We have seen one team tonight, Tasmania, win on the road, and Melbourne in Melbourne, pretty favourable whistle, just kind of by the gravity of that crowd and that team. Justify this to me. Why are you picking Tasmania?
So Tassie are going to win because I thought that the JLA Huck Porty Twin Tower situation was a really impactful group, two players for Melbourne. And I thought a lot of offense could run through them. Sam Froling just made them look stupid. Now, I'm seeing Will Magnay in really good form. And I think Lee. Magnay alone can handle these two dudes now. And then you've got Lee as well. So I think that nullifies what I would have thought Melbourne's biggest strength would be. Then on the wing, like Travers, Doyle. Well, you know, Travers does well, but I think Doyle might be able to handle him pretty well. Then you've got Illy McDonald. I mean, that's kind of a push. They both play pretty much the same way.
Yeah.
I just think that where Melbourne would usually have an advantage, they may not against the Jack Jumpers. The matchups, I like them. And I think the Jack Jumpers, just their stability and their doggedness and their defense of the island will get it done.
The lack of the home court doesn't bother you at all? Melbourne came back from 16 down with 3 minutes. And they, yeah, I suppose they did it in Perth. But winning a game in Perth against that Perth Wildcat team is not the same as winning against Melbourne in Melbourne. They have to do that to win the series. It's really tough. They've only got three chances to do it. I love your rationale on the bigs, by the way. Love it. Eloquent, accurate, brilliant. Flip. I see Ian Clark at Melbourne. I mean, the thing I'll say is this. The Sean McDonald piece in this, he looked really good in game three tonight.
Yep.
And the fact that he can kind of... You know, I think you might be right. I'll have to look at the betting in the week and we might revisit this. But at the minute, you're right when you say it. I mean, Froling made JLA look silly and Huck Porty. Yep. And they came so close. And in Tasmania are a better Illawarra, right? They do the same stuff. Hit the boards, pound it inside, limit mistakes.
Yep.
I love your rationale. I can't fight you on it. I think I'm going to agree.
Now, the way that I think Melbourne could shuffle the deck and put things in their favour, they will not do this. But what I would love to see is fewer minutes for Golding and more minutes for Ian Clark. Clark is a better player.
Oh, of course, totally. And that's
but
the problem,
Golding's
isn't it?
Got that Melbourne United. He's rub. Their poster boy.
It's hard to sit him, isn't it? I totally agree with this, by the way. Totally agree with this. Where I think he's better for it too. He's punchy and punchier in punchy minutes. And when he's a starter and logs long minutes on court, there's a bit of diminishing returns with Golding. Carries a lot of gravity though. This has been a good series. I think basketball is going to be the winner of the day. No, I'll be more specific. No, I'm going to go. I'm with you.
Larry Kesselman's the winner.
I'm going with you. I'm going Jack Jumpers. And I think they're going to steal the second game they play in Melbourne. That'd be my guess.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Poof. Oh, at home court. I can't believe I'm picking against it. All right, I'm belittling it now. But, yeah, I love your rationale. You convinced me. I'm going Jack Jumpers. But if I change in the week, don't be too surprised. I want to jump over to something else. We spoke about Melbourne United. We spoke about Larry Kesselman being... happy with either outcome in the grand final.
Yep.
Having said that, a little less happy, sold some of his stake in Melbourne United. We got to tread lightly here. What did you think about this announcement and this news, Andrew Kenyon?
Well, the guy that he'd sold it to, I'm not familiar with his work.
Aaron Sansoni?
Just don't know much about him.
Philanthropist and empire builder?
Seems like a rant, like sort of an interesting... sort of dude. Not sure where he's made his money. It's kind of hard to follow that.
Yeah.
Seems a little hand wavy. Mm-hmm. But he's obviously made enough of it.
Well. I'm just going to go on what I know for sure. So I had some free time today. So on Mr. Sansoni's website, he lists a couple of numbers. They have apparently operations in London, Los Angeles, Singapore, and Melbourne. So I called the office in both London and Los Angeles during business hours within those times of day. And both of them, even though I called at, I think, 2:30, half past two
to the London office or the Los Angeles office, and then I think a similar time to the other one. Both rang through to saying it was out of office hours and sent me through to a voicemail in an Australian accent. I then called the Melbourne office, and that sent me through to, you know, I don't want to sort of speak in generalities, but it sent me to what would seem like a phone answering service, not in this country, maybe a farm. It just had that sort of, you know, we've all received those calls. It just had that vibe. No, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it just had that vibe. Okay. Also, he's a very interesting cat. I'm trying to be really delicate here. So Mr. Sansoni has 1.4 million followers on Instagram, right? Which is huge. Mm. That's a huge number of followers. But yet on his reels and content, he typically gets around about between 50 and 100,000 views, which is consistent with an account with a following far smaller than that, right? You would expect a million. So I'm kind of like, well, is that number real? And we're sort of talking about where's the money coming from. The other thing that's, I'm not going to use the word red flag. The other thing that I thought was very interesting, or certainly particular to the new buyer, was the fact that he has an investment in over 100 businesses. Did you hear that, Kenny?
100 businesses.
But here's the thing. The way that, and I think it's called global management or something. I wrote it down. I'll have a look here. But the way it works is there's not actually an investment. The way the business works is he takes equity in exchange for tutelage about how to grow the business.
Ah, a bit of business coaching.
Business coaching for a percentage, which I guess could be called an investment. Now, there's like an investment is not a financial term necessarily. You can invest money, which I think would be the best thing for a business if you got an investor who invested money that you could then spend. But then I guess if you invest time and tutelage, that's also considered an investment for an equity share. I mean, it's a very, very... If I came to you and said, wow, your business is doing really well, give me 20% of it and I'll point you in the direction of where to go, would you find that a compelling offer?
No.
So Paragon Global Investments is the name of the operating arm. And then obviously there's a bunch of kind of business management classes that range in value from $3,000 to $4,000
to... It's a bit Tony Robbins. Is that kind of what you're saying? Like, give me a bunch of money and like, come, I'll sell you my book and a workshop. And
also at these things, no lunch. It says specifically on the website there will be no lunch. They run through lunch. That lunch is a weakness. They just keep going
lunch,
on.
Lunch
through.
Is for closers.
Yeah. So
to
steal, it's like
to borrow a phrase.
You got to get someone to sign on the fucking dotted line before you can have a muesli bar. Yeah, so I don't know. I'm not saying anything. I'm saying something without saying anything. I just find it very peculiar. Now the other thing is 10% performance.
He's a best-selling author. Which is incredible because I've certainly not heard of him. But if he's best-selling,
well, do you know how many books you have to sell to be a bestseller? So within
I imagine not many.
1,000, I think, to be a bestseller, you have to sell between, I think it's either 1,000 or 2,000 books within 6 weeks of initial release. So that's quite a lot, I guess. But I think if you said to me, "Hey, you need to become a gun to my head, become a best-selling author in 12 months," I'll convince 1,000 people to buy my book, or I'll buy 1,000 copies, get on the bestseller list, and then just slowly drip feed them out of my garage over many years and finally make up my investment. So I guess what we're trying to say is it's an unusual proposition. Can I ask you this? $4 million for 10% of Melbourne United, good business, bad business, Canyon? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Oh, it's bad business. You're not going to get a return on that.
No, I mean that values the club at $40 million, right?
There are so many other places. If I had $4 million, that I would put. Assuming I want to get an actual return, if I want to like show myself as a, you know, well-to-do, well-heeled kind of person, look at me cruising, meeting and greeting people in the premium seats so that I can juice my business and sell a little bit more product, then maybe it's the place to be.
I'll float a little bit of a conspiracy theory that's flying around out there. There's word that this is all done to bolster Craig Hutchinson in a way that Hutchinson still owns some of Melbourne United, right?
I think he divested the whole thing, didn't he?
All of it? I'm not so sure.
Wow, don't know.
I'm not so sure.
I thought that was part of the deal, but
this is very kind of we're flying by the seat of our pants here. But I thought he did still own some of Melbourne United, and therefore the fact that 10% has been bought for $4 million values the business at $40 million, which means that anyone else's percentage also goes up in value, which may be very, very relevant and helpful when, say, I don't know, fending off debt collectors of any kind. So maybe there's that. Like, can I also ask, maybe it ups the value of the Wildcats just by proxy? Am I talking sense or do I sound like an idiot?
That you would say, what's the comparable value of a similar asset when you're trying to value difficult assets? You say, well, what else is on the market? What else can you get? And they can say, well, look, Melbourne, same league, similar size sort of fan base, same kind of team, big city. Therefore, it must be worth about the same.
And then the other thing is,
if he bought the Wildcats for $10 million or whatever, what are the Wildcats now worth? 35, 40?
Exactly. It just means his value's gone up overnight when he really hasn't done anything. And you also got to remember is that, you know, as much as Larry Kesselman probably doesn't need anyone in the NBL, like, SEN has a heck of a hand in the NBL. It has Perth. It has a bit of Melbourne. It has a bit of New Zealand or New Zealand team. A bunch of different stuff. But even just in its telecast and its sort of promoting of the league, and I'm sure the betting ad roll money and all that sort of stuff. Not that the advertising dollar is very good at the minute. This is all very convoluted to say that what we're trying to say is, Aaron Sansoni, welcome to the NBL. You're an owner. And you can come on the NBL Pocket Pod anytime. Bring your business ledger. We'd love to see how you've made your money. We think it would be a very interesting exercise.
I mean, I'm looking at this website for Empire Mastery, one of his programs.
I did say in a tweet, it's got sort of David Brent, like the word philanthropy is mentioned a lot. David Brent meets Andrew Tate kind of stuff.
There's a lot of words on this page. It's a very long web page, a lot of detail. Yep. But I'm just up there. Aaron will be unveiling his secrets to creating, growing and multiplying businesses to build an effortless empire over these 4 days. Man, if growing a business was just easy as 4 day seminar, there you go. Amazing. Aaron Sansoni's fans have begged him for years to pull back the curtains on how he has gone from zero to dozens of companies and brands in under 10 years. Now here's your chance to see it revealed. Aaron's Empire Mastery will reveal the knowledge he has built by working in over 42 countries across 100 industries globally in 4 intensive days.
The other thing I'll say is the business is located at 84 to 88 Montague Street in South Melbourne, I think.
Well, I always like doing street views. Street views is a great insight on these sort of things.
Yeah, not the most, not the best area in Melbourne. I don't know Melbourne terribly well. It might be nicer than I think, but if you've got, you can hear the clattering of a keyboard in the background, so if you want to have a check it out. But also the funny thing is I don't know what the structure in that building is because I went to it and I think it's still listed as a possible rental. I don't know if he owns that space or leases it. I can't comment to that. But I sort of came up and it seemed to me that the space is there, but it's also a rental space that you can, let's say we wanted to film NBL Pocket Pod TV show, we could go in there and rent the space and film it in the sort of mock-up TV studio they've got there and a couple other things.
I see, okay.
So I don't know who's kind of keeping the lights on and paying the rent at that business. Now it could be anyone. It could be Empire Business. Could be Sansoni himself. I don't know. It just wasn't, as you say, it wasn't as conclusive as I'd like it, you know, in a brick and mortar site. But again, maybe these are all irrelevant and unimportant. I don't know.
It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. Very interesting. Why now? You know, and why Kesselman? What's he selling for? I don't get it. I've always wondered. I've met Larry personally. Nice guy. What's he sees in this league? Some of his moves have always been very calculated and easily understood. This one, I mean, people have been up his ass to diversify out of Melbourne United and teams for a long time. That's not going to happen. His investment is needed in Brisbane. It's needed in Tasmania. It's needed in Melbourne. So I don't think there was any moral conscience all of a sudden now hit him like a spike. We're like, oh, you know what? Now that I own the league, I better
diversify my some of my holdings in Melbourne United. It just didn't make sense. So the sale amount is peculiar to me. The timing is strange. I'm just not getting it.
This is fascinating. I'm Gladstone Street or whatever.
Oh, Gladstone.
It's got Empire, like signage for Empire on the front of the building. Then you go around the back, there's a little laneway and there's heaps of graffiti on the walls. It looks like it's an old converted gym or something.
I think that could be a Banksy. I think that's worth
something. There's a lot of graffiti. Man.
Yeah, so I don't know that area well. I don't know that area well, but check it out for yourself, people. Melbourne United fans, pop on down.
It's right near the train line. So that's convenient. There's a station right there.
That is indeed. Then there's also the issue of, and there's actually a really good account. I'll shout him out. He goes by Pleb. I think he's like the worst super coach fan or something. His profile photo on Twitter is Wayne from Wayne's World. So I'm sorry if I've got his handle wrong, or his or hers handle wrong. I really can't remember. But he also brought up that there's a defamation case where Mr. Sansoni has appealed to Google to take down a defamatory review of the business. I can't really remember it, and I don't even want to bother paraphrasing it, but that tweet's certainly worth your time. That's a fun read. But all in all, we'll see how it pans out.
Amazing. Really interesting. Well, I wish him well.
Yeah. And Melbourne United, great team to be a part of. Canyon, man, where are we going with this? Are we wrapping it up, or you got something for me?
No, I think that's about it.
I think that's all the NBL news, I really do.
Yeah.
Grand final starts.
Let's see if it doesn't get crowded out by the footy. Let's hope so.
That FIBA break.
FIBA killed it, man.
Just killed every bit of momentum. These games could have happened 2.5 weeks ago, and not have coincided with the opening round of the AFL and NRL and that Vegas thing. Ugh, bad timing for the NBL, but. That's us. Follow us on Twitter and Mastodon. It's all in the description. We're one of the last, one of the last NBL pods that kind of does this independently. We also do it rather infrequently, but you can't win them all.
Yeah, well, we've been crowded out by the league itself.
Well, that's the thing. I looked at the Chartable rankings the other day, looking at other sports pods. NBL Today is 7th on the Australian basketball tally. For people out there that want to see podcast charts of what's popular, both just in general but also in niche categories, go to chartable.com and it has it on there. It has Australia, USA, a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, I went to Australia basketball and there it was, NBL Today, 7th. I think the secret of its success is short. I have to commend them on it. Short episodes, 10 to 15 minutes, and they upload seemingly every 2-3 days, 3-4 times a week sometimes.
Yep.
And that's the secret. And so they've got a lot of content, therefore they've got a lot of downloads, therefore they're up the charts. It's working well.
It lets you manage the message.
Manage the message, exactly. Speaking of managing the message, do you have a last message to manage?
I'm trying to think of something pithy. What have I got? Give me something.
NBL Pocket Pod, build your empire with us today.
Oh, I like that. We should offer a seminar.
Oh, that's the other thing. That's my favorite thing. On the website, Mr. Sansoni, you can make a pitch to Aaron. It has a thing, pitch to Aaron. It says it right there.
Oh.
Click on it. Now, the problem is you have to be a business with at least $1 million in revenue per annum.
Damn it.
Okay. We fall a little bit short of that number, but we are highly motivated. And I tell you what, we will... For a small slice of equity, very small, we will give our tutelage. And that could be worth billions, our tutelage. Am I right, Kenyon?
I would like to think so.
Yeah. So we'll take some equity. We'll take brick and mortar equity. Like we'll do that. We'll take it on the chin. But we will give you back tutelage in how to pod about Australia's, I think, 10th most popular sporting league. I think it's a fair trade. Who says no? All right, Canyon, we're out of here. Thanks, everyone. NBL Pocket Pod, Joe Core, Andrew Canyon. See you, probably after the finals. Maybe during. We're not sure. We'll see you then.
We'll see how we go. See you, Joe.
Perfect. Bye.